Welcome to Parley, the Hindu's weekly discussion podcast. This is K. Bharat Kumar, your host for today. In this podcast, we have Mr. B.K. Singhal, also known as the Telecom Man of India. He was the former Chairman and Managing Director of BSNL in the early to late 1990s. He was instrumental in bringing the internet to India and chaperoning the Indian technological space as we emerged from the 1991 liberalization policy that helped us develop as an economy. He's also co-authored a book called The Telecom Man, where he takes us through his professional life. And the book is as much about his career as it is about the transition of India into a technological powerhouse. Thank you, Mr. Singhal, for joining us. We also have Dr. Sridhar here from the IIITB. Dr. V. Sridhar is professor at the Center for IT and Public Policy at the Institute. He has published a couple of books, The Telecom Revolution in India in 2012, Dynamics of Spectrum Management in 2014. He is currently authoring his third book titled Emerging ICT Policies and Regulation. So thank you, Dr. Sridhar, for making time to be here. Welcome, both of you. So like we've discussed before, I've set out the context to this conversation to both of you. You know, it's interesting that after long years of rising tele-density for India, we've seen a slight dip in the recent past. We've also seen a time of economic slowdown, which is impacting the ability to purchase. Consumer demand is down across various sectors. But at the same time, we also have investors, you know, from across the globe lining up to invest in the telecom services space. So these are interesting times, and across several issues that have been plaguing the telecom industry, it would be great to have both of you weigh in on these issues. So if we start with tele-density, and I'd like to give Mr. Singhal the opportunity to go first here. Mr. Singhal, how have you seen the last 15 years for the Indian telecom space? And especially in the last few months, as consumer demand has been impacted across sectors, do you think that is impacting the telecom subscriber base as well? As we see urban density, which has been the flag holder, actually seeing a dip.
Thank you, Mr. Bharat Kumar. And thank you, Dr. Sridhar, for being a co-panelist. And Mr. Bharat Kumar has given me the difficult task of sort of opening batsman, of course, not with a beamer or anything, but let me try to respond to the question. You see, tele-density has been increasing since 2002 and 2003. As a matter of fact, the trigger point was brought about in 1999 when we moved away from upfront license fee payments or entry fee payments into pay-as-you-earn regime, which is you earn money and you pay a percentage of that as a license fee. So there was an entry fee and then there was a license fee on an ongoing basis. The initial attempt of the government when the auctions were, rather the licenses were auctioned in 1992-93 time frame, the government wanted to garner all the money which could be available at that point in time, but soon realized that it's not going to work that way because there were no investibles left after they had, collected investors and had the business going. Anyway, that's history. So 99 was a critical year from where on the telecom density of cellular started to increase. There were other changes also which were brought about. For example, the call party paying regime was also a deterrent because most of the people would disconnect the call, see the number, and then say, okay, we'll call back. So there were many, I would say, steps which the government took to create a healthy environment service to the customers, which there were hindrances here and there. For example, the 2001 wireless in local loop entry, backdoor entry, the so-called backdoor entry, which again put some sort of brakes into the growth of the telecom network. But that was resolved, and there was a good policy in 2003, and the growth in telecom continued to be mind-boggling, and it was good for the industry, it was good for everyone else. So again, there were problems in 2007 when the flawed TRA regulation of auction, not to auction, the remedy in case the demand exceeds supply, and you know the resultant so-called the nefarious 2G scam, resulting into cancellation of licenses in 2012. But having said all that, the growth in the industry continued absolutely unabated. It continued unabated. Now, I think the question is that there is some dip and some drop in the consumer numbers, and also there is drop in the revenue numbers. Well, we could attribute some of it to, say, the COVID-19, but that's a very, in my view, that's not a very permanent, say, fixture. But the point, and I mean, it has also, the drop in revenue is also because of, I think you have used somewhere, the brute competition is also because of the brute competition. And then the TRAI is saying that, look, there is no floor for, the tariffs are foreborn, and there is no floor. You can go to any level. I mean, literally, you could offer a service free. So there have been, again, certain irrationalities, let us say, which have resulted in a negative growth of the revenues. But let me address the specific issue of the drop in numbers. You see, we have been living with multiple SIMs, especially in the urban areas. Everyone has two or three SIMs. The reason being that is just trying to get a feel of which subscriber is better, which service provider is better, who is offering better bouquet of services. And especially, you see, the low-end customers, they are very slippery customers. Somebody offering 10 rupees less of 80 or 90 rupees prepaid keeps moving. And people have been having, it's a done thing. The people have been having multiple SIMs amongst all classes of subscribers, As a matter of fact, TRA by itself admitted at one point in time that the actual numbers are literally 30% of what numbers you see being bandied around by various operators, etc. So I am not unduly worried.
Okay, so thank you. Dr. Sridhar, one is, of course, do you have any other perspective, or do you agree with Mr. Singhal? And if you do, do you think we've reached a point of saturation, or given TRAI's admission that, you know, we've probably 30% overstated, we'll actually continue to see a dip in subscriber base and tele density?
So Bharat, thanks, and thanks to Mr. Singhal also for answering this particular question. Okay, so I'm not too much worried about the actual tele density or the subscriber base, because as you are probably aware, we have reached almost the near, about 200% in the urban areas and close to 60 to 70% in the rural areas. So I'm not too much worried about the actual subscriber base. I am worried about the broadband subscriber base. So if you look at, so we have moved away from voice. I mean, tomorrow, the future, or even currently, and it is only about the mobile broadband. You know, for example, if you look at the recent statistics from TRIA performance criteria, we have about 656 million broadband subscribers, mobile broadband subscribers, and a very, very small amount, about 20 million, 19 million to be precise, of fixed broadband subscribers, right? And this is a concern because, you know, assuming that we have about 80% of the population covered through mobile, whether it is one SIM or two SIM, it doesn't really matter. We are still, you know, covering roughly 50 to 60% of the population through mobile broadband. Now, since last year, it has increased by about 200 million. In the last year, at the same time, it's about 450 million. Today, it has come to about 650 million. So 200 million subscribers have been added in the last 1 year, mobile broadband, and that is good news. But still, we have a lot of ground to cover, right? And this is very much important. The second worrying aspect is fixed broadband. You know, we have about 35 million fixed Dell subscribers, direct exchange line subscribers in the country, out of which the fixed broadband connects only 19 million, you know, roughly you know, less than half. And fixed broadband is very important for our future. You know, for example, especially when we are moving towards tele-education, telemedicine. I mean, as we have seen in recent COVID-19 times, the work from home aspect, we need a reliable fixed line broadband, which is pathetic in India. So, there are other worrying aspects with respect to subscriber base. You know, for example, if you look at the wireless broadband subscribers, the BSNL has hardly, you know, overall total mobile broadband subscriber base, BSNL has just about 21.5 million, which is roughly 3% of the broadband subscriber base in the country, right? Reliance Jio has about 58% of the broadband subscriber base. Bharti Airtel has about, you know, 144 million. Vodafone is about 111 million and so on. But BSNL just has connected 3% of the mobile broadband subscriber base in the country. That is a worrying aspect because as a public operator with a pan-India presence, you expect more of broadband connections to be coming from BSNL. In fact, if you look at the landline broadband, you know, out of 35 million, close to 28 to 30 million are owned by BSNL and MTNL. So, in landline, you know, out of this 19 million of fixed broadband, I'm sure that BSNL has a good part of it. What it lacks is mobile broadband. So, in mobile broadband, the telecom operator BSNL or even MTNL has not made any breakthrough at all. So, this is a worrying aspect with respect to connectivity, right? And I'll park here and then we'll come back and discuss about the other aspects.
Okay. So I think that sets the pace for our conversation. As we look into the future, the past is always important. So we will loop back into the tele density questions as we come to the close of the conversation. So the next issue that I wanted to discuss with both of you, and it's right up both your alleys, Dr. Sridhar, you've written a lot about this, and Mr. Singhal, you've been in the thick of the action when it comes to policy. And here I'm specifically talking about the AGR dues that telecom companies seem to owe the government. The government has made its demands. It's gone to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court has said so far and no further you guys pay up. So there have been a lot of questions saying, one, is it fair to the telecom companies? Because they're already battling high debt. And Mr. Singhal, in his early articles, I noticed you've argued that it's because of poor business planning and vision that you've that the industry has run up so much debt. Partly to blame, and then partly the regulator is to blame as well. So in the context of AGR, is it even fair to the government? Because after all, the government represents the people of India, the money is owed to them. Or is it fair to the telecom companies because they had to sign this no matter what and accept the definition of AGR? So I'd like both of you to weigh in, and like before, I'd like Mr. Singhal to go first.
Thank you. I think you would one down on there. You see, the question of AGR is a very vexed question, to be very honest. And I have written a critical review in one or two
peak papers and also in one or two telecom journals. I have shared with you the article I had written in, which was printed by Financial Express. See, there are a couple of points which are misplaced in the judgment by Supreme Court. See, first of all, they are putting penal interest on the telecom operators, kind of announcing them or painting them that they are willful defaulters, which is not established. Are they willful defaulters? You see, the penal interest is imposed if they are willful defaulters. I think in my article, I have given a reference by Supreme Court to say that the penal interest can only be imposed on willful defaulters. They are not willful defaulters. How have they come to a conclusion that they are willful defaulters? That is one big flaw in this AGR stuff. The second big flaw is that the case has been going on for the last 15, 16 years, and the government has merrily now put the interest on the basis of the number of years at some LIBOR plus 2% or something like that. Now, where on earth is the industry to be blamed for the delay? The delay has been from both sides. If industry has gone to the court and had a favorable judgment from TDSAT during the Justice Alam times, which was very clear and categorical that you cannot have AGR included for non-telecom services. If I remember, it was para 87 or something of the judgment. And then government decided to go against that judgment to Supreme Court. In the Supreme Court, then it dragged on and on and on. And finally, somewhere around October, November last year, there was this judgment coming out of the Supreme Court. So that is point number two as to why have they been, first of all, treated as willful defaulters. Second, why should the government be charging them for all the years, which is a mutual drag in the court, which has been going on and on and on? Of course, the entire thing is predicated because of the faulty definition of AGR, which industry willy-nilly, knowingly, unknowingly, unwittingly accepted when they wanted to migrate to the new NTP policy regime, which is that you pay the license fee and you pay an entry fee, which got fixed at 1658 crores, and then license fee was fixed at 10% or 12% of AGR, and spectrum charge, which has of course has been going down as we have moved along. So that's the crux of the problem has been the faulty interpretation of AGR, which the government is unwilling or compromise with or have realized. Now, I also want to bring out another very interesting factor. Justice Bobde, in the Devas case, asked Devas, why don't you waive off the interest? Because our liability is increasing every day. Now, if Justice Bobde can ask in one case that, hello, industry, waive off the interest, why can't the same thing be applied to, in this case, also waive off the interest? The second point is that in the Enron case as well, I think I sent you the link, maybe relevant is that there is no criminality in this. So therefore, because there is no criminality, perhaps they can waive off the interest. So that is another aspect which has to be looked into. And maybe I come back to this later. I have few suggestions going forward as to what should be done by the government going forward on the AGR and the taxation part to see the industry to be in the pink of the health. I think let Professor Sridhar have his views as well.
Yes, so Bharat, thanks. Thanks for setting the context. So I would like to look at it from a different point of view, Bharat. Right? So what is AGR? AGR comprises of license, I mean, the dues which need to be paid, the regulatory fees which need to be paid, are broadly categorized into two areas. One is the license fee, which is 5% universal service obligation fee, plus 3% as license fee. So total of 8% of the AGR. The second one is the spectrum charges, the spectrum usage charges, which range from 1% for the 2300 megahertz, which was bought by Reliance way back in 2010, up to 7-8%, depending upon whether the telcos are holding liberalized spectrum or unliberalized spectrum. This is huge. I mean, we are talking about 8 plus 7, most probably about 15% of the adjusted gross revenue going as regulatory fees to the government, right? I have argued again and again and again that this is a flawed regulatory policy. Because if you look at any other country, the license fee is not more than 3%, including the Universal Service Obligation Fund. Here we are charging 8%, plus apart from that, the annual spectrum usage charges. Right? Now, the spectrum usage charges, there is no reason why government should levy a spectrum usage charge when the spectrum is auctioned. You know, for example, in last year, last auction, 2016, the telcos coughed up to 60,000 crores on buying spectrum. Once you buy the spectrum with this huge upfront cost, why should we charge again and again every year for the spectrum usage? Because spectrum is not something which will deteriorate over time, right? It doesn't have, depreciation cost. It doesn't have any management cost associated with it, right? So why should we charge spectrum usage charges at all if the spectrum is auctioned and the operators are willing to pay an upfront fee? So I've been arguing against this for quite some time. Now, having been in this situation, the Supreme Court has just gone by the executive order. Right? The executive order says that this is the adjusted gross revenue which is due from these companies and therefore they have to pay that. Right? So the only thing which can be corrected is for the Department of Telecommunication to take a bold decision on cancelling or revising the adjusted gross revenue that is due from the operators, right? Excluding penalty, for example, as Mr. Singhal mentioned. Now, if we don't do that, we are already seeing two telecom operators already in the brink of collapse. One is almost on the verge of collapse. Now, this is not good at all for the telecom industry because then we will be left with duopoly, right? And that is not a good situation to be in. If you remember, in 2008 to 2010, 2011 time frame, we had 9 to 10 operators providing service in a particular service area. When I mentioned this to Federal Communication Commission, CTO, when he came over here to Bangalore, he was astounded. How can you have 9 to 10 operators providing service in a telecom service area? This must be hyper competition. At that time, we wrote a paper. We also advised the government that in the steady state, India, with its huge mobile population, can potentially have up to 6 to 7 operators. Now it is down to 4. If it comes to 2, then we are doing a disservice to the telecom industry and to the consumers at large. So that's my viewpoint. So the government, at least even today, they can make a decision on revising these regulatory levies because it's one of the highest in the world and it will kill the telecom sector and also the consumers.
Okay. So to your point, Professor Sridhar, I think 2 days ago I saw a headline, I think in our own paper, where both the government and the industry committed to the Supreme Court saying we will not come back to you for a recalculation of the AGR. So that seems to be the most recent development. That, and then, you know, there's one thing. So if I were a company and, you know, starting back from 2002 or 2005, 2007, I know that there are demands on my resources where I have to pay a certain fee. I may not agree to it. So the two things that I could have done, right, as a company, one is, and I don't know if that should be the benchmark for all demands of the government from private sector, where the government says, okay, you owe me this, you pay it up. And then you know, come back and say, let me fight it out in court. This at least helps you prevent interest accumulation. That's one point. And secondly, if the government and the industry have committed to the Supreme Court, we won't go back and recalculate AGR. Are we potentially looking at two or three? And looks like Airtel may be able to better weather this challenge than Vodafone Idea, and we don't know how it will play out. Do you think we are setting ourselves up for a two or three player telecom market?
So definitely, I mean, Bharat, given the legalities, yes, the telco should have calculated, should have paid the fees, and then later on fought instead of dragging it so long in the courts. So that is definitely that is a fault on the part of the operators to have dragged this issue to this stage, right? When they cannot really go back. The second thing that you have said is yes, we are looking possibly at about 2 to 3 player market. If this comes through, then I am not sure whether Vodafone UK will continue to infuse capital into Vodafone Idea, right? Because as we have seen, the CEO has already made the remarks, it is going through a very rough time. And, we saw a lot of people like AT&T, for example. Mr. Singhal must be aware of that. In the soon after our mobile sector was opened up for foreign direct investment to come to India and then get back, right? So all the foreign companies which invested in India actually went back. Again, same thing happened in 2008 when Etisalat and all these Maxis Telecommunication, all these companies which invested in India saw no return and they went back. And the same thing is going to possibly happen to Vodafone, right? So that means that we are basically looking at 3 player operators. Now, world over, even if you look at the US, in a particular area, there are only 3 to 4 operators. So I will not say that is really, really bad, as long as the 3 are well equipped to compete against themselves, right? I mean, if, as we are seeing, there seems to be a monopoly emerging in this particular 3-sector player as well, in which case it will not be good for the consumer, because consumers will be left out of choice.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Singhal, you said you do have some suggestions, and if you could add your viewpoint to one more corollary question I have. So you've run a telecom company, right? I mean, and if I know that dues are being mounted upon me, whether I agree with the government or not, the least I could do as a telecom company, or any company for that matter, is to start making provisions, right? I mean, if I'd made these provisions over a period of 15, 18 or 20 years or whatever the period is, wouldn't it have been easier for me as a company to deal with these demands?
You see, it won't have really solved the problem, even if you had made provisions. Because once you start making provisions, generally the mindset then is accepting that, okay, we are likely to be in default. And those are some of the concerns which I'm quite sure the industrialists would have in their minds, that okay, they are making provisions, so they are, in case the judgment goes against them, they will pay up because they have made provisions. And let me also just say at this point that when Vodafone purchased from SR, they made a provision of something like $3 billion to be paid to the Indian government, which the Indian government has been demanding. They made the provisions, but they have still not paid those $3 billion, and they are still fighting in the courts. I'm just making a reference. So provision or provisioning can be okay in a public sector, because there you go through 3-4 levels of audit, and the auditor is unwilling to sign your balance sheet unless you have guarded yourself completely, quite unlike, to be very honest, in the private sector. But I have slightly a different take on this, and which I think Professor Sridhar also alluded to, is we are taxing two issues. We are taxing the industry, the success, industry's success in perpetuity at 33%. We are not leaving the money they make out of the growth for any investables, like, let's say, broadband, fixed mobile, etc., etc. So there is a need, a hard look, which is required by the government to look at this 33% in perpetuity. If I earn 1 rupee or I had earned 1 rupee, I pay 33 paisa. Now I earn 2 rupees, I still pay 66 paisa. And the industry also has not been very smart, deliberately, I think, to present to the government some spreadsheets to say, okay, you reduce this 33% gradually, but we will ensure a minimum revenue to you from telecom sector. I think Dr. Sridhar mentioned about the upfront spectrum charge which we have paid. But I am also trying to tackle this 33%, which is ever increasing. There can be revenue neutralization. And there are cases worldwide. For example, Ofcom in UK told the government or all the industry as well that you just can't be in a mode of windfall profits all the time, so you pay more tax. And if they were sort of not doing well, they got dispensations so that the industry remained in the pink of health. So that's another question which should be posed before the government by the industry, that why don't you go into revenue neutralization mode to say this is the date, say 2010, 11, 12, we paid you this much of revenue when we were on top. We commit the same amount of revenue, but not because of the growth, but also a minimum revenue will pay plus inflation, so that your revenues or your books are balanced for all times to come, that this is the revenue from telecom industry. So I am of the firm belief that the government should look at ways and means to reduce this 33% in perpetuity. That is point number one. The second point is that government has all the powers, as I think there are articles which have been written, that we should have a bold prime minister like late Atal Bihari Vajpayee, who could change the policy in 1999 and waived off crores and crores of rupees then and turned the industry into absolutely glowing health. Why can't the government look at, okay, the operators may not go, but that government can suo moto take a decision and look at it dispassionately on the wrinkles, like why should we be paying for the entire duration of the legal battle? Why should we be in our interest? Those are all executive issues which can be sorted out by the government. I think those are the issues which should be brought into public.
Okay. Mr. Singhal, there's a question for you. So I know you have strong opinions. You did have strong opinions about the 2G scam and so on and so forth. So for especially after that development where, so many lakhs of crores of rupees was due to the government as per a post-facto calculation by the CAG on the 2G spectrum auctions. So any government after that would be very wary of giving away stuff to the industry, even if it means it's good health for the industry, good for the economy. So it is a matter of perception, right? So how would you, if the government came to you for advice, what would you tell them?
You see, there was I, by the way, appeared before the PAC three times. I was a witness. I have been quoted in the PAC report 27 times. You see, I was asked to give the calculations. I gave the calculations from five, let us say, models. Five models. The simplistic model was that you inflation index the entry fee of 2003 to entry fee of 2007 or 2008, which would have been at about 7,000 crores or 8,000 crores. That was a very simple, reasonable way of saying that, look, this is what it could be done. The second one was the share price of various telecom companies at that stage. Then we indexed it into the BSE Sensex movement and how much it has appreciated. And then we had also, and the main problem arose because in the secondary market, the spectrum was sold at 6 times and 7 times. Now, that money didn't go to the industry. It didn't go to the industry. That money went to some unscrupulous people. You see, if the money had gone to the industry, nobody would have raised a finger to say that you sold the spectrum cheap. The multiples of the selling the 2G spectrum after they acquired the licenses in 2007-2008 was 6 times, 7 times, 8 times. Now, that was the valuation. That was the valuation which was picked by CAG. So, there were 5 or 6 valuations varying from something like 30,000 crores for 4 licenses or 5 licenses, going up to this astronomical number of 1,76,000 or 1,26,000 crores. Okay, the point is, this was later corrected by the then Honorable Finance Minister, Mr. Chidambaram, and said, oh, but by the way, if you want to sell your company, you will not sell your existing shares. You will issue new shares, which means the money would then come into the company. But that it was too late. See, the point is, the TRA regulations, recommendations of August 2007 were very seriously flawed. Very seriously flawed. The regulators stayed away from saying what will be the outcome in case demand exceeds supply. There was no mention of that. If that was mentioned, come back to us if the demand exceeds supply, then this problem wouldn't have been there, because he would have then suggested auction. And by the way, let me also remind everybody, page 30 of the recommendations of 2003 by Bagel very clearly said that any future license with spectrum has got to be auctioned. Very clearly said. Complete defiance of a policy which was approved by the parliament in 2003. It was placed on the table of parliament by Mr. Shuri when he made these changes. So the, I have no sympathy of the government of the day. They really destroyed the industry at that time. It was an unavoidable flaw. It was a constellation of poor regulation, poor administration, somebody not listening to somebody, PM saying I don't know, and PM in December 2007 makes an announcement that we will auction the spectrum. You can do such a heavy statement. He said spectrum is a scarce national resource. It must be distributed equitably in a fair manner, recognizing the economic value of this scarce national resource. He made a speech in Vigyan Bhavan over some 1,000 delegates, and everybody was clapping that, okay, some bold decision has been taken. And here is Mr. Raja, walks out, gave an interview to Times of India and other newspapers, because I remember being approached, saying, Raja says, I'm not going to auction 2G spectrum, period. So he didn't auction 2G spectrum.
Okay. So thank you for that insight, Mr. Singhal. Actually gave us an inside view of what has flowed up, the water that had flowed under the bridge over a period of time. My next question is to do with ARPUs, and we've talked about the industry being teetering on the edge, one or two players at the brink of extinction, and ARPUs have historically been, at comparatively low, very low compared to global standards. And we came across a Jefferies report that Airtel was quoting, saying it should be 300, ARPU, average revenue per user should be 300. That's probably more than twice what it is now. So given that the industry has not been faring well, do you foresee average revenue per user going up and hence the health of the industry going up? How do you think this is going to play? Professor Sridhar, would you like to go here?
I'm just quoting some figures here, right? I mean, you have correctly said about 300 range is the ARPU. Now, according to the ITU ICT price bracket study, India is ranked 49th in the mobile broadband data plans, right? So for about 1.5 GB per month, our average data plan rate is at about $4.75 per month, right? Adjusted for purchasing power parity. Now, the world average, according to the GSMA database, R2 of the operators for who are providing mobile data services at about 1.5 GB per month is about $8.45. So we are roughly, we are very low compared to the international average in terms of R2. Right? Now, this R2 combined with an increase in the volume can probably make up for the loss of revenue because of intense competition. Right? So in the between 2012 to 2016, we saw this drop in R2, and later in after 2016, because of the entry operator Reliance Jio with aggressive data plans, the R2 again declined because of price decline. Right? Now, so this R2 is not sustainable at all, because Mr. Singhal has correctly pointed out. There is no extra revenue for the telecom operators to invest in the networks, which is very much required. So the ARPU has to go up. Now the question is, how will the ARPU go up? Okay. Now it is not through pure data usage fees. The ARPU can also go up based upon the content that is generated or creating a larger ecosystem. The operators playing the role of not just connectivity and bandwidth providers, but also as solution providers. It is possible that the telcos can tie up with businesses, especially in 5G and IoT, in order to have other avenues for revenue than the retail sector. So these are all possible ways by which the ARPU of the operator can actually increase. The business ARPU can definitely increase. And those are all the possible options for the telcos. But, now we have seen that, the entry operator, the new entrance strategy of pricing it very low because the operator already had excess capacity. Now we have witnessed that the prices might go up, but still, given the market such as India, I don't see the retail customer ARPU to be going up very high, right? It has to be compensated through additional value-added services by the operators, including business ARPU. That's my take on this.
Thank you. Mr. Singhal, do you have a view? Because that's one point that I had when actually hyper-competition, that's what the global players seem to see when there were 9 players in India. And whereas now that we have 3 other than the government player, and actually there is hyper competition because the other 2 people, Airtel and Vodafone, are wondering how to match this free voice but data priced kind of competition. So do you have a view on how this is going to play out as far as average revenue per user is concerned?
You see, if you look at the data usage per sub per month growth, it has grown 43 times in last 3 years. In September 16, it was 0.235 GB per sub per month. And now it is close to 10 GB per sub per month. The point to be noted here is that there is what I call tariff rebalancing, which is how do we tariff the data vis-a-vis voice is what needs to be looked into. I have my reservations that the tariffing of data is still not being properly carried out. I'm not saying that there should be obnoxious numbers for data charging, but there should be reasonable numbers for data charging. There are reasons why I say this. See, for example, today, would you believe that about 60% or so of the long distance calls, whether internal or external, are running on internet or broadband connectivity? People are hardly making any
any switched calls. Now, if that be so, and this is what we have, and also we have even given inputs to TRAI, if that be so, let there be studies as to how much of revenue which has migrated away from the conventional switched business into the packetized or the internet business, and then look into the tariff for the customer or subscriber for data, and also for voice. There are still a large number of customers who are using basic voice service, so there has to be a tariff for the voice as well. But see, there are two factors. One is to look at the tariff, and two, to stop this obnoxious free for all, free this, free that. As a matter of fact, regulator to some extent is also at fault when Jio came into play and gave some 1 year of free data and free voice, blah, blah, blah. He should have intervened at that stage itself, that you are not doing any favor to anybody, not even to yourself. And at the same time, you are hurting the industry. See, there was a lot of brouhaha on this that the regulator decided not to act. Let's be very clear. There's no doubt in my mind that the telecom will continue to grow. Every time I look at telecom, I only see this as the, what you call, tip of the iceberg. I have never ever if I could see the iceberg below. So what I'm saying is, telecom will grow, but allied with it is fair competition and fair tariffing, affordable tariffing. That's what needs to be done.
So, which means you're saying the regulator should come in and say there is a certain floor for the voice calls below which you cannot go, and even internet-to-internet voice calls, at least domestically, should not be permitted, because there used to be a law, and I don't know what the status is. Like, you can call your cousin in California internet-to-internet, but not your uncle in Bombay if you're calling from, say, Delhi. I don't know what the status of that law is. So on these two points, Mr. Singhal, one is, are you saying there should be a minimum tariff for voice calls? And what should be the regulator's ruling on internet-to-internet calls?
So first of all, Bharat, I have a very simple axiom. Don't fight technology. Technology is a facilitator. Okay? So let's not fight to say, you can't call my cousin, or I can't call Bharat in Chennai, but I can call my sister in California on internet. No, I'm not saying that. I have never propagated that. All I'm saying is that you have practices and tariff put in place. We have given inputs to TRAI on this when their revisiting tariff came some 6 months or 1 year before, that please calculate what is the amount of tariff traffic which has moved away from the conventional traffic flow to internet traffic flow, and then come out with the tariff plans. But don't stop it. Don't stop it. Technology will find its loopholes.
Okay. So I think in the earlier comment that Dr. Sridhar made, he referred to 5G spectrum. So, given the the state of the industry right now, and they may not even have money. Many of the players may not even have money to pay the government on their dues. Are we ready for the auction for the 5G spectrum? COVID apart, once the COVID madness is behind us, if the spectrum auctions were to take place, is the industry ready to make use of it? And even if it did, it has to be hyper-competitive, because I think I read in one of the articles that Mr. Singhal forwarded to me that the tariffing should be much better there. It should be seen as a luxury offering. But unless there is hyper-competition there, the business that comes in may not be adequate to justify the amount spent on obtaining the 5G spectrum for the service providers. Dr. Sridhar, would you like to go first here?
Yes, correct. See, 5G, see, we have moved from, you know, in 1G, it was voice and it was controlled heavily by the operators. 2G, it was data, still controlled by the operators. 3G and 4G, we have seen content and application providers, just internet companies, providing over-the-top services, and they appropriated much value, right? And therefore, they relegated the telecom companies to normal bandwidth providers. 5G is going to be very different, right? 5G is not about connectivity and high speed only. It is about creating an ecosystem. Ecosystem which consists of, for example, equipment manufacturers, the domain representatives, and so on. For example, in the case of healthcare, it is an ecosystem which has to be created consisting of telecom operators, healthcare providers, hospitals, governments, and so on, right? And also the system integrators which provide Internet of Things and machine-to-machine communication and so on. So 5G is more about creating an ecosystem, right? And this, for this ecosystem to come up, I mean, this is the correct time for us, right? Because most of the countries have already launched commercially 5G. So we have some good reasons, because TSDSI, which is the standard body in India, has also communicated a standard for rural areas, which has been accepted, which is in the process of it's being processed by ITU for possible inclusion of 3GPP. So it is a good time for us to start thinking about 5G. Right? Now the question is about the spectrum that is needed for 5G. Now 5G, there are specific spectrum bands, just as for example 24, 26 high frequency, 24, 26 gigahertz band or 60 gigahertz band, which are suitable for picocell operation in 5G. But 5G can also be operated in other spectrum as well. We need to have spectrum so that high bandwidth intensive applications can be provided to the end users. India is poor in allocating spectrum. We don't have enough spectrum for the operators. Despite the consolidation that has taken place, still the operators do not have adequate spectrum to provide low latency, high coverage, high reliable communication services, intense bandwidth communication services. We need to release a lot of spectrum. Now the spectrum, blocks of spectrum can be released only in the high frequency bands. TRAI has given the recommendation way back in 2018 about releasing 3.4 and 3.6 gigahertz. That has not yet been done because the auction is yet to take place. Now, 24, 26 gigahertz. That frequency band has to be released by the government for picocell operation. Now, these are all put in the back burner and it does not come up. Now, whether the operators will be able to pay for the spectrum, even if it is auctioned. Okay. Now, there is one important point which you have to note down, right? We have included simultaneous multiple term bus sending auction after the Honorable Supreme Court verdict from 2010 onwards. This is an excellent auction, right? The methodology is very well suited and it has been used widely throughout the world. Now, what is wrong is the setting of the reserve prices. We have always set the reserve prices based upon the winning bid price of the previous auction, which is never done in any country in the world, right? And therefore, having a very high reserve price puts off the operators. 700 megahertz spectrum, which went unsold in 2016, is remaining vacant for the last 4 years. What have we gotten, right? If we had reduced the reserve price for 700 megahertz spectrum, at least that would be used by the operators. Now it is lying vacant and it will again be put up on auction. And if the reserve prices are high, then the operators will not have any money to pay for that and they will not bid for it, right? We advocate actually starting with a zero reserve price, right? Because, the simultaneous multiple round ascending auction will extract true value from the bidders. It is an excellent mechanism. Why artificially increase the reserve price so that either the spectrum goes unsold or the operators pay huge amount, resulting in winner's curse. So my take on this is that the government should release 3.4, 3.6 gigahertz, 24, 26 gigahertz for 5G, and then set the reserve price as low as possible, even at zero, for the operators to extract true value of the spectrum. That's my take on it, Bharat.
Thank you, Dr. Sridhar. Mr. Singhal, one is, of course, the spectrum issues that Dr. Sridhar has dwelt upon, and also whether the industry is ready for this. At this point in time, given their finances.
Let me start by giving you a global picture. I'm quite sure Professor Sridhar also would be aware. You see, the latest count is something like 100 million worldwide 5G consumers. And would you believe 80% of those are in China? 80%. Outside world has not more than 20 to 25 million consumers outside. Number two, there are literally three technologies today. One is the Huawei ZTE technology. Then you have Nokia. Then you have Ericsson. The standardization of the so-called open radio access network, software-driven networks, there are various other acronyms, I don't want to throw them around, they are in the process of being standardized. And by the way, there is no American standard today. There is no American standard. So it's Europeans versus the Chinese. And they are two different technologies which are in existence today. So therefore, the industry, rather than saying that we don't want, the industry is also waiting and watching as to which, now with the sanctions, as to which technology to choose. They have very limited choice. And they would want into a technology which is interoperable. I certainly don't want to buy Nokia and also Ericsson and say, oh, but by the way, they don't work with each other. That's not how the industry doesn't work. The handshake, the interoperability is prime in any industry, anywhere. See, that's these are figures I'm quoting from. I attended a CUTS webinar about 2 weeks ago. I attended another webinar day before yesterday, which was organized by a small think tank group. And this is the state of play in the world around. So people are asking questions, why should we be the guinea pigs? And third, most important, what is 5G? As Professor Sridhar, in his opening comments, stated, 5G is a bandwidth which has to be used by consumers, and consumers must have devices to use those bandwidths. Again, in a webinar, I won't name the company, and the girl, she was claiming herself to be an expert. You know the rationale she gave for 5G? You can Netflix before you bat your eyelid. I'm not interested in that. Another example she gave, the automobile factories would require mobile 5G. Come on. Mobile 5G for what? They want a big fiber fat pipe and then distribute it by a Wi-Fi wide area network or local area network to various stations to control their remotes, to control their quality, control their inventory, to control various things. She gave a rock example. She said, no. And incidentally, I think their Professor Sridhar could have put a sort of real number. The fixed users are going to be something like 80-85%. And mobile users are going to be about 15%. And the use of E and V band in the dense urban areas, has anyone seen or discussed about the health hazards? The obstructions, the complications. Israel has not adopted E and V bands yet because they say there are health hazards, because there are propagation problems. You see, the point is that we get into this somehow the euphoria, E band, V band, dense population, millimeter waves. I think we need to address the issues in a more practical, realistic, way. In my mind, I have a 5G in my house today. I'm talking to you on a 35 MB because I have a wireless LAN. But my fixed fiber from BSNL gives me 80 MB, 90 MB. If I'm sitting next to the BSNL router, Wi-Fi router, I get 70 MB.
Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Singhal, but what is your view that we can afford to wait for 5G as a country before and fix our problems before we get in there?
I think we should wait, not rush into, and we should educate the government. 5G bandwidth, higher bandwidth, you can get on fiber.
Mr. Singhal, sorry, I'm butting in. I think Dr. Sridhar has a hard stop. I just have one more question. So given all of the problems that we've been facing as an industry and the opportunities ahead of us, so what gives global tech majors and private equity investors the confidence that there is still a lot of juice left in the telecom industry and they have lined up to invest, albeit in one player, that is Reliance Jio? So there is a lot of hope left in the telecom industry, or is it going to be a one-horse player that everybody seems to be backing, which is not great for the country? You need multiple players to compete. Dr. Sridhar, please go.
Yeah. So if you look at the investment in the sector today, it is very different from what has been happening until recently, right? So previously, AT&T or Telstra, the telecom operators in other countries like Etisalat, would pick up a equity stake or buy put an FDI in the telecom companies. Today, it is Facebook, Google, and other internet firms that are putting in money. Why? Because the value appropriation is more on the content and applications rather than on the bandwidth, right? So given that, India has a huge strength. But the strength is just the numbers, right? So we have about, even give or take, the millions, that 650 million broadband subscribers is a huge potential base for any internet firm to tap into. And therefore, I see that we still have a lot of opportunity for the telecom firms to appropriate values along with the internet firms. So I won't be surprised if, for example, Amazon is interested in picking up a stake in Airtel, for example, right? Because it will include the synergic operation of the electronic commerce firm along with its digital cloud offering, along with the telcos offering. So we'll continue to see more and more interest in the internet space in India. I won't say specifically telecom, because the telecom firms do provide internet services, and therefore the internet firm should be interested in telecom per se. But in general, because of the huge digital consumption potential in the country, I will still continue to bet on the telecom sector, telecom and internet services sector, as a potential venue for investment, both by private equity firms as well as the internet firms in the world.
Mr. Singhal, so, basis of what Dr. Sridhar said, you think somebody like Vodafone Idea should actually pivot on their offering, combined with somebody like Amazon and say, here's what we're going to give our customers?
I think they should do that. In my mind, the game has just begun. And as I said earlier, I keep on looking around me, and I only see the tip of the iceberg. I very much doubt we'll see what is. So what they should do is, you see, Airtel has also a very strong partner. And as a matter of fact, Google wanted to go with Airtel. They were looking at them. And by the way, Vodafone has a very close relationship with Google in the rest of the world. So it's a little bit intriguing as to how come they went with Jio and not with them in the industry, in the Indian scenario. So the triple play of e-commerce, e-commerce including payments, etc., and entertainment, healthcare, agriculture, everything included. There's lots and lots and lots which can be done. There could be billions of devices interconnected to shop floors, to our growing fields, to sense the moisture in the ground and you know, various things, the state of the crop, how much is it going, not going good, price points, selling. There are a whole lot of things which can be done if we have good connect. And I think the key is connectivity. So let me say again, the game has just begun.
I'd like to bring our conversation to conclusion here. Thank you so much. You gave us a wonderful perspective on what we've been through as an industry in the country and what awaits us in time to come. Appreciate your time, Mr. Singhal and Professor Sridhar. Thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks, Bharat.
Thank you.